to throw things in can do that too. But what we realized was that the conversation is around, well, how do we do things? And which, of course, is informed by who we are and what we're representing. And so to realize that in everything we do, the foundation of that is who we are and what we're going for, what we're representing as we do that. Because our product is, actually, this is going back to Dave many years ago, isn't it? Our product is how we're doing. I don't know if I'm misquoting him, but essentially something along those lines. So in the case of events, and I suspect it's true on every other level, we need these two things. We need, the first thing is we need training for all of us, for all of us to get really clear how to answer that question. Who are we? And what are we representing? And then to learn, to train ourselves to look to that in how we're doing whatever we're doing. So instead of, one way I talked to the events team about it, and I said this to Sherry too, was I had this little insight for myself that it felt like we were looking to what Sherry wants instead of looking to who we are and what we're representing. And, of course, the what Sherry wants
is for you to know who you are and what you're representing.
Yes, exactly. And so the it's a pretend what Sherry wants, and what it really is looking to condition mind.
Or
trying to figure out what Sherry wants.
So one of the things that I, when Chris and I first started working together, one of the things that I talked to her about often was there's never a time that you're not being watched. You might think you're not, and especially if you are following the guidance of custody of the eyes, you will assume that everybody else is too. And, of course, they're usually not. And so we are always on stage, and we are always, for just about everybody we're around, the representatives of Buddhism. So we could say, oh, that's really unfair. it doesn't matter whether it's fair or right or whatever. That's what people are doing. So if we combine that with a conviction that I hold, and I bet the rest of you do too, that this practice is one of the best avenues for waking up and ending suffering that's available, that's around, the thing that I don't want to do more than almost anything is be somebody's reason for not following this path of waking up and ending suffering, because I have been observed in an unconscious state that communicates to somebody that this practice doesn't work.
That was a lot.
Does anybody want to reflect that one back to me? Or?
Yeah, in this room, everyone is taking notes. Almost everyone is taking notes. Because it feels like those three things you just said are incredibly significant. Hang on, Dave's got some.
Well, you know, the reason I started taking notes is it occurred to me that I could take down the key points and put them on my recording. Because this seems like, more than anything else, there's things I'm going to want to remember.
And can I underline one thing, Sherry?
Yes, please.
Because the place of that... you are specifically talking to us, to this group of people. There's never a time that we're not being watched. We're being watched all the time. I wrote down both ways, actually, not realizing that. That it seems important that we all stop and take that in, because I know everyone, I project that everyone can kind of have their own, I'm sort of on the periphery. I mean, I'm not really one of the, I'm newer.
You're not responsible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the responsible party.
Yeah, exactly. And to really realize, everyone that's on this call, people see as representing.
People cannot tell the difference. People cannot tell the difference. Okay? Even people in our organization have trouble understanding our organization. Right? And then you take that out to people and try to have them understand something like the relationship of keep it simple to the rest of the organization. To just about everybody in the world, the registration office is the monastery.
Right.
So, they would, you know, the reason, of course, that I scream about this as loud and long as I do is that everybody in the world assumes that everything that happens came directly from me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, in that way, do people know that? Do you have a sense of that?
Sure. I know it from just kind of having my experience of it, sort of. Kind of on both the receiving end, the giving end of that.
Yeah. So people don't, for instance, they don't get something with a bunch of typos in it and say, somebody was just having a bad day or whatever. But that's their experience of practice, of our practice. Okay? So, you know, when you get something and there are a bunch of typos in it or misspelled words or bad grammar or whatever it is, what do you think when that happens?
Somebody was unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think it's a statement about the whole organization, you know, everybody. I lump it in, too, with that, the whole organization.
Yeah, ignorant, right? Not that bright. Ignorant, not that bright.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Have that kind of, you look at something and kind of judge the organization behind it or whatever based on the appearance?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yep, for sure.
Yep.
I mean, I can think of like three examples off the top of my head. Yep.
Yeah. So that's the broadest definition of you're being watched all the time. There's not a single thing that we can do that isn't potentially being held against Buddhism. And everybody who's had any experience at all with retreats knows that this is true. Right? The food isn't marked. There was wheat in something. What? That's the end of that. And these people are just whatever it is. And now, we could say that's egocentricity or that's self-hate or whatever it is. It's conditioning trying to get out of doing this. But the point is that goes on.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm sure we'll get to this, but what I was seeing as you were talking is that, and as we go along and we're paying attention and we're being in the present moment, if we, quote, make mistakes, but we're in the present moment, then I don't know how to describe it. Then we model just doing whatever needs to be done about that, and we're still modeling. So we're not. In other words, what we're not going for is clamping down and trying to get it perfect and get it right. Because
That's exactly right. So at every step of the way. It's the thing that we talk about with parents who are so terrified that they're going to mess up their children. And from my perspective, it's far better to be who you are and model what it's like to bring compassionate awareness to the life of an adult than to tie yourself into a knot trying to become the perfect person. So basically what we're saying is our highest purpose and our constant focus is on coming from center rather than conditioned mind. Yes?
Yeah, we're taking notes.
Yeah, because we could, you know, we could have example after example after example after example, but what it comes down to is, are you present, here, aware, paying attention, looking to life for guidance, or Are you lost in conditioned mind in a conversation, trying to figure things out, trying to get it right, trying to be the right person?
Everybody's madly typing or writing at the moment.
Right. Aren't we recording this?
Yeah, we're recording it too. That's
yeah.
very inspiring, Siri. It really, you know, really, I mean, it feels like that's what Zen is, just keeping that in our awareness all the time.
All the time.
And something else that it's reminding me of, we read a book called The E-Myth a long time ago, and it reminds me of the experience that the author gives of going into an establishment and seeing how everything is just perfect, and it makes such a lasting impression on this person. And it just represents everything about the care and the tension that went into everything.
Yes.
And
go ahead.
No, it just reminds me of the thing that would be helpful as we look at the practice and how we represent everything, that it come from that light too, because he goes on about this color makes people respond this way, and I mean, it's just amazing how much attention and detail we put into things, and that represents us.
Yes. So I told somebody about being in New York recently and having dinner in a Korean Zen vegan restaurant. And it was one of those walk through the door and be completely transported to another place and time. And it wasn't that it was foreign. That wasn't it. It's that the whole thing was set up to feel what a Zen garden is meant to communicate, what Ikebana is meant to communicate, what the tea ceremony is meant to communicate, an attitude of mind of absolute, calm, peaceful presence. And there was not a detail in that place that didn't say that. So it's like, is it a hologram? Where you could look next to your plate and see the chopsticks lying on their little wooden support. And that communicated it as completely as walking in and seeing the choice of color and design and plants and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So it's not have all that and then, oh, by the way, here are these paper napkins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the attention to detail that can only come with presence. It's being present in a way that creates the spaciousness that allows the moment to unfold in a way that presents the moment to everyone who's there and able to receive it.
Jerry, if it's not gone already, could you say the second one of those?
No, Dave.
Rats, I figured it was too late.
Because as we would suspect, I'm not listening.
Right, okay.
If somebody can remind me and it sounds familiar, maybe somebody else heard it, but no, I couldn't.
Yeah, I think we may have lost the chopstick holder, but didn't lose the force of it, just lost the word.
Right, yeah, it's that the attitude of mind is represented in the smallest detail, because when we are really present, you know, we talk about this all the time, when we're really present, the moment is very spacious. There's time and space for everything. And so because we're there, the moment is spacious. If we're off in a conversation or looking at conditioned mind or that sort of thing, then, of course, the moments just flip past and we miss the whole thing. But when we're really there, everything is communicated in everything because everything is everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, as Jen is indicating, it doesn't do any good to get some stuff right. You know, conditioned mind would like to operate on the basis of, well, I'm doing better than I used to. Well, that just misses the point utterly. Okay? It's the old a little bit pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
It either is or it isn't. There's no try. There's no in between. There's no sort of. And so, you know, when I nag people, I'll walk around the property or walk around somewhere, and I'm picking up trash and seeing all of this stuff, and I'm saying to whoever is there to be subjected to it, what are people doing that they don't see this? And I don't mean that as judgmentally as it sounds. I'm wildly curious to know what goes on with people that they are not attuned to the surroundings that they're in. And, of course, I can only guess that they're not there and that they're not there because they are involved in a relationship with a life that doesn't exist here. And whether, so, you know, we can talk about this, and everybody listening knows what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, nods here.
Yeah. So the rest of the world, there are a lot of folks who would not be able to follow this conversation, but intuitively they sense completely what I'm saying. Okay, so when they walk into that restaurant, they have the same experience that I'm describing, even though they wouldn't have the words to describe it, they wouldn't really know what was happening to them, or they would have completely different words to try to talk about how peaceful it was or how calm they felt or it was so serene or whatever that was. They're having the experience. And that's my concern. That's what I'm hopeful about, that we can, as a group, operate in a way that whether people can put words to it or not, whether they know what's happening to them or not, they're having the experience.
Sherry, when you said at the beginning, we're always on stage, always being what? It seems to me that could also apply when I'm in my hermitage.
Oh, absolutely. My teacher used to talk about that a lot. You know, live your life as if you're on a 50-yard line of a packed football stadium.
Yeah. But the idea being...
In fact, it's better than that. When you're with people, act as if you're alone. You know, respond as if you're alone, and when you're alone, live your life as if you're on a 50-yard line. So there's not a self-consciousness.
Yeah.
There's a hyper-awareness.
Yeah, the watcher isn't being judgmental.
The watcher isn't conditioned mind.
Yeah.
Awareness is present.
Yeah.
Which is a vastly different experience from conditioned mind watching and critiquing.
Yeah.
You know, the image that just came through for me as you were talking, Cher, is looking back at the thing about the attention to detail that can only be available from presence. So we can't try, we can't clamp down and look, okay, from now on we're going to get it perfect. I had this image flash through of what, I have no idea, what it might be like to be an Olympic athlete and where you're just there, you know, and it's about to, whatever, the event's about to start, and you can't you would totally mess it up if you just, like, tried really hard to
make
it happen. But you just have to completely let go into the training that you have.
Exactly. That's a very, very good image for it.
Well, and what came through for me, or what piqued my attention, was when you said that we operate as a group in such a way that people have the experience of practice, that all of this is done and practiced collectively, which brings a whole new layer of practice, you know, to it all.
Yes, yes, yeah. Because, again, you know, somebody goes to a key group in Toledo, and they do not know that that person sitting on the cushion isn't dialed directly into the Buddha via us.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, this is Marie, and you know, the thing you were talking about, my sense of it, or my experience of it recently, was coming here and being in the monastery kitchen, because, you know, it's like the stuff in there is not new, and, you know, it's kind of like a collection of all kind of things, but yet being in there, I get such an experience of Zen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's how things are done.
Yes.
And, you know, coming here and just kind of walking in there and just being able to plug in and to that, I don't know, it's just, to me, there's something really beautiful about the experience I have of being there.
Yes, yes. Another really good example. And what we want to, so if we take the kitchen as an example, we want everything about that kitchen to represent, to communicate the respect and reverence that we have for life. So the way we treat everything and the way we treat one another is that same expression of reverence. So it's not a matter of, I'm going to walk over that thing on the floor because I don't feel like bending down and picking it up, and besides, it's not really my job, and I'm sick of this, and it's, okay, it's an act of reverence to pick it up. And if we get to the point of realizing that and doing it with a glad heart, we have a level of freedom that is palpable when people are around it.
Yeah, and the experience I'm aware of is that when I move from reverence, I experience reverence.
Precisely. And people, again, whether they would use that word or not, they can feel the experience. It takes them to the experience. So, you know, when people leave a TINW, which is the longest period of time that people spend in that kind of focused, facilitated curriculum experience, what they say is, I can't believe those facilitators can pay attention for that length of time. It was the most extraordinary thing to be there with people who were always paying attention. Okay? So it's great that we're able to communicate that in that kind of situation. That's what we want to be communicating all the time.
Yeah, Chair, you know what I'm seeing is that conditioned mind is always trying to pull us out of center into the content of things.
Mm-hmm.
And what our challenge is, it feels like, as individuals and as a group, is while we do our work and, you know, do everything that it is that we do as we go through the work of of maintaining practice is to not allow, basically not to allow that to happen on that scale. So not to lose that perspective that you're talking from right now as we attempt to do the work we're doing and getting lost in the content and the details and losing the spirit of Zen.
Yes, and that's really perfect, because when you're facilitating, and it doesn't matter whether it's a TINW or if people are practicing on Tuesday night facilitating group or whatever it is that we're called upon to be in that role, okay, what we're aware of is the importance of staying present and focused, right? Because we know that not only is it important for our own practice, but the other person or the people are depending upon us to be that compassionate mirror that reflects or that sort of thing. So they're counting on us to be centered and present. Is that everybody's experience?
Mm-hmm. Yep. In some ways, it's easiest there.
Well, yes. Yes. Because we don't have to face any kind of information that says, no, actually what I should be doing is thinking about my to-do list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no room for that, really.
No, and the stakes are too high, and it's just awful if we fall for it even for a second.
Yeah, it only takes once, really.
That's right. And so if we can really get it that everything, all of life is counting on us in the same way, regardless of what we're doing, that's the point I'm trying to make. That there's nothing that we need to do that requires us to leave the intelligence that animates us in order to do it.
Yeah,
when I phrase it that way, can you see how silly it would be to fall for the idea that there is something you could do better from conditioned mind than from center?
Yeah, for sure. Well, it feels like I've heard you say this a number of times, that we're practicing to be facilitators all the time.
Yes. Yes. Facilitators of life.
Sherry, what it feels like for me is a stretch, and what I notice I'm really wanting to get is that line you said, that everything in life is counting on us in the same way, that of being in a retreat and facilitating, or any time in facilitating. And I guess what's coming up for me is this little voice that says, gosh, I wish I could see that.
Well, the secret to that is if you will only see it when you do it. If we wait to do it until we've seen it, it'll never happen. Because, and you know, this is the proof that what we do is Zen. In doing it, you will realize that you have already seen it. Isn't that good?
That is good.
I reflect that little section back, Sherry.
Yep.
Okay, so you will only see it when you do it. If we wait to do it until we see it, we will never see it. In
That's
doing
correct.
It, you will realize that you already see it?
That's correct. Now, I don't know if you people are getting this from the email class or if you're caught up with the email class, but you can see it over and over and over. How people will listen to a voice framing what they want out in the future, and they are doing it right now while they are believing a voice that says this is what they hope to see or hope to get or hope to have. Well, you wouldn't hope to have it if you didn't already have it. It would never occur to you. So it's a con, of course, from conditioned mind that says, okay, you need to figure this out, or you need to look into this and until you see it. But you never see it that way. The way we see it is to. So it's what people talk about. You know, I'm completely messed up. I'm identified. I'm whatever. Okay, what time is it? It's 10 to 3. Okay, it's time to sit. Hey, there's nothing to figure out. Just do the next thing. So we have all kinds of things to do. We breathe. We come back to the body. We come back to our senses. We listen to the voice of the mentor. Whatever brings us into the present. And as soon as we're in the present, as soon as we're in the light room, all questions are answered. But they'll never be answered outside the present. So it's quite simple and straightforward, really.
And it feels like what you're talking about begins to make the intersection between the two things that we're working on, which this one that we're starting to work on, where, who are we, how are we, where are we looking, and then the second one of the structures to set up to support that. Because when you just said that, I'm messed up, I'm identified, what time is it? The schedule is one of those things that's set up as a, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's going on. You don't have to figure it out, just sit. It's time to sit. It's time to eat. It's time to do whatever. And it feels like hopefully the structures we'll put in place will be that same kind of, it doesn't matter, I'm not going to condition mind to figure it out. This is a this kind of event, and so I do this now.
Yes, and the more basic aspect of that is I'm here to be present.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm here to be present. I mean, we all know stop, drop, and breathe.
Yep.
We know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a theory. It's not a, pretty soon when I'm through with this, that's what I'm going to do because I love to do that.
Right.
It's moment by second by moment by second.
Yeah.
I know what to do. Get
yeah.
out of the story. Get out of conditioned mind. Drop that attention down to the hara. Breathe. Be present. Well, yes, but no. No yes buts. So the point of all of this, of course, is that most of the world does not know that, what I just said. Most of the world doesn't know it. Most of the world doesn't know that there is a way not to be trapped in egocentric karmic conditioning and self-hate. They don't know that. Okay? So what we have the opportunity to do is make possible for people a practice that will free them from that suffering. We can't talk them into it. That doesn't do any good. Okay. Once they're open to it, we have things that they can be guided to do that will help them have the experience, help them understand what resistance is, what self-hate is, how the whole thing works. But everybody on this call and a whole lot of other people who aren't on this call are past that, past what we are offering to the rest of the world. Everybody on this call is ready to live what we are offering the rest of the world. So my teacher would say, growing up spiritually is when you stop looking at what you can get and start being concerned about what you can give. Not what you're getting, but what you're doing. Yeah?
Yeah.
Can people see that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I was yelling at everybody at the monastery a few weeks ago, right? Anybody remember that rant?
Did we say which one? Was it when you were down here on a Thursday night? It might have been the recording that I wasn't here, and you said, look to your heart, that one? Was it on a Thursday night, Sherry?
It was on a Thursday night.
It definitely was
yep.
that one then. Alex
and was, I was telling people that they need to knock off being concerned about what voices in their head are saying.
Yeah.
Those days are over. So I was just writing to somebody in the email class. The voices says you're ugly. Okay? And then the mentor offers something, and the voice says, but you really are ugly. And my response was, you know, getting upset because somebody who hates you says hateful things to you is just silly. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It's just silly. It's not anything that we need to concern ourselves with. And so moving into that place of realizing that each one of us is potentially a portal into ending suffering for somebody who is trapped in a reality that they don't know there's an alternative to is huge. So it comes down to what my teacher said to me. You know, you need to do for the love of others what you wouldn't be willing to do for yourself. Hmm. And that's what's possible for us. And, by the way, it's the most joyful way a person can live. So the way we can demonstrate that is through everything we do. Again, my teacher would say, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing with two hands. And, of course, what he meant was, if it's worth doing, it's worth bringing all of your attention and awareness to. Not having part of your attention and awareness on what you're doing and the majority of it on a conversation with conditioned mind about what's wrong with you or them or it or whatever. If you want life to support you, you have to give your whole heart, soul, mind, body, attention, and awareness to life. It's the only way it can give you what you want. If you hold out on it, you'll never have it. Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're past, I'm the wrong person, that's the wrong thing, I made a mistake, I can't do it, it's too hard, I don't understand. Can we do the old, put all of our hands in the center of the circle and yell whatever is our peace cry about that? Mm-hmm. You know, we're done with that. It's finished. It's tired. It's old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm remembering what you said a little earlier about living life with great reverence, and it just seems mm-hmm. that is such a place to live with reverence for this being, to be in that place of done with, nothing wrong.
Oh, yeah. Reverence. Oh, yeah. I'm done with it. I'm finished. That's old.
You know,
and then, excuse me. Go ahead, Dave.
No, you go ahead.
Well, it's just that from that place, then it is possible for us to have a chance to be truly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Dave.
What I was seeing is that, you know, what you're saying leads directly to, you know, the current theme, I think, that's in our whole practice and that we're really talking about here at the monastery, of having practice supports and reminders fill our every waking moment during the day, just because it's so, you know, the habit to go to egocentric karma conditioning is so strong. And we've been having conversations here about what can we do to completely support ourselves through every moment? And how can we work with the resistance that comes up to guidance in order to, you know, to really make that choice that we want for our hearts?
Yeah, and, you know, when you think about it, to step back and think about it, resistance, what is resistance? Resistance is something that hates you and wants your life. Now, when we consider that, and everybody on this call is certainly capable of considering that, you know, there you have someone in your life who hates you, who wants you to suffer and be miserable, and you look to them for guidance in your life. What kind of insanity would that be? So, job one for everybody immediately, if it isn't already, is to see resistance for what it is and stop colluding with it. It's insane.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that explains why there's so much energy that comes from following the guidance and really doing, you know, taking advantage of all the supports that are available. That's really been my experience. You know, the more that I give, I mean, the energy just goes through the roof, and it's not like a manic kind of energy. It's a beautiful, grounded, just, you know, loving life kind of energy.
Yes, yes. And the simplest kinds of things put you in that place of delight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life delights in everything. So picking up that piece of whatever it is off the ground is just as much fun as a human being can have when you are there and present with life. For life, there is no, this is more fun than that. Okay, that's all conditioning. I want this, I want to do that, that's going to be so great, I'm going to love that, I'm going to feel that way when that. That's all conditioning, and it's all hogwash. And anybody who's been around for as long as all of you people knows that as well as I do. It's a complete setup to miss this moment and the next moment. So no resistance, ferreting that out, identifying it for what it is, getting it on your recording, getting the mentoring on your recording that you need to hear, not to live in it, not to believe it. You know, I mean, for me, it would be as simple as whatever I feel resistance to, I'm going to do. Boom. That's it. The end of discussion. If there's resistance, that's what I'm going to do. Can people get that?
Yeah.
And can you feel how that is a direct path to mastery?
Mm-hmm.
Can you? You can say no.
Okay, so let's see. Whatever I feel resistance to, I'm going to do that. So that's a direct path to mastery, it feels like, because every time I do that, I'm breaking the pathway that's connecting, like, I think I'm the resistance.
That's right. So I hear a voice that says, I don't want to get up in the morning. Okay. Uh-huh. Set the alarm for an hour earlier than required.
Yep.
Until I love getting up in the morning. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. I don't want to exercise. I'm going to exercise until it is the most happy thing in my life.
Yep. Yep. Okay, I can definitely see how that would be the mastery. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, again, St. Teresa, the little flower,
yeah.
Remember her? Right? Hated that nun. Decided to make her her best friend. Was so good at it that her own biological sister was just eaten up with jealousy. Or we can lie around as the George Bernard Shaw, you know, whatever it is, you know, whining that life won't give us what we want. Feverish little clod of ailments and, ooh, he makes it so clear. Do people know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Well, yep.
Yeah.
Okay. We've all been feverish little clods of ailments and complaints or whatever that is. We know that place. So, you know, there's the resistance patrol, right? I'm looking for resistance. Because that's the direction I want to go in.
Well, I'd never seen it that way, that actually the practice of that could be the entire thing.
Yes.
Looking,
yes.
Being on patrol for resistance and doing it.
Yes.
Whatever it is.
Doing the opposite of what it says. I don't want to. I can't. It's too hard. I don't understand. Yes. Yes. As a matter of fact, I do understand. And as a matter of fact, I can. And watch me.
Because all of that resistance is made up. And I think that in my experience, the bigger and louder it is, the more joy and freedom is on the other side of it.
Precisely. Precisely. It is in equal measure.
Mm.
All right. Is this what we're supposed to be talking about, Jen?
Sherry, this is Sequoia, and I just wanted to say, just flying in the face of resistance, I just am really appreciating the opportunity that's available here in this call today. It's just like really speaking to my heart, and I just want to say this is just extraordinary.
Good. In that kind of response is all the proof we need of who we are. It's back to that thing we were talking about earlier. If you weren't already that person, you wouldn't have that response. And that doesn't mean that karmic conditioning doesn't jump in whenever possible to try to convince us that's not who we are. But the point of it is, you people wouldn't be doing what you're doing with your lives if you weren't already the people that I'm describing. So it's silly to try to indulge resistance to that. It's silly to pretend that that's not the case. Can people see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's huge to take that in. To answer your question a minute ago, yes, this is exactly what we need to be doing. I think we just got like 3 dozen peace quotes.
Good.
And then Marie said, not to mention a valuable recording, right? I mean, truly, I'm with Sequoia. I just think, wow. I mean, this is like an email class and a retreat and a I don't know what, all just in this. Oh, my God, the privilege of it is incredible.
Well, good.
This is Michael.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to say that, for one thing, I'm really appreciating this, too. And when you started talking about resistance, I started experiencing resistance, and I also started experiencing fear. And I was watching it more than I usually am able to, and it, in a way of going, wow, this is really interesting. Kind of in the way of nothing's happening. Absolutely nothing is happening, and I'm experiencing this immense fear. And and also I'm having experiences of seeing through resistance. So
yes.
I'm buying this story that, you know, I'm not going to do what Sherry is saying, and I think I'm doing it. So.
Yeah, and so, again, you know, this that's the kind of thing we want to get on the recording, right? So my obsession, my current obsession, the one that I'm hoping everybody on this call is going to help me be able to articulate and deliver in a way that will be helpful to people, is how do you tell what is you and what is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate? Now, that's a perfect example. Okay, you're sitting there. You're sitting there. Nothing is happening. You're listening to what could be kind of an inspiring conversation. And there's tremendous fear. Okay, so if you want to know what egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is, what it feels like, what it does, how it acts, and how you respond, there, you just had an experience of that. So what you do is get out your little tape recorder at the first opportunity and say something along the lines of, when those feelings of fear, of dread, of whatever it is come up in me, I can know that that's not me. It's egocentric karmic conditioning. It's scrambling around, fighting for its life, trying to make me think I'm it so that I'll stop being present to life and get involved with it. And what I need to remember is, it's not me, and I don't need to get involved with it. It has nothing to do with me. I can jump up and down and shake my arms and legs to let go of the energy. I can sit and watch it. I can do any number of things with that energy that's going through my body. But what I must do is realize it is just energy. It's my energy. I don't need to put a label on it, and I don't need to do anything that it tells me I need to do, and I don't need to feel the way it tells me I need to feel. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, a perfect, very clear, actually, example of what I'm hoping people will get. There's the difference. You are the conscious, compassionate awareness that is observing that. It is the feelings that are labeled fear going through your body, trying to make meaning out of something that doesn't even exist.
Mm-hmm. Sherry?
Yeah.
Could I? I am, you know, when the call first started, I was kind of identified with the tasky stuff. And when you asked that question, are we covering what we need to cover in this call? It sort of triggered that again. And what I was able to see is that you know, when I started the call, I was like, should I take notes? Is it going to do, you know, there's all this talk about that, you know. And as you were talking, I was just watching that identification just kind of slither away because inspiration was taking its place.
Yes.
And it was like that is exactly it, that small small mind of wanting to get the list right or wanting to get the things checked off is that that colluding with everything conditioning is that you were pointing at. And what's possible instead is to you know, live in the inspiration that really illuminates it all at once. I think that's what you're pointing to, I think, anyway, at least what I'm seeing, is that when we live in that whole body, mind, soul, heart way with life, that it illuminates everything.
That's right. And you never have to worry about a thing. So that you're going to dial the number and be on the call. If you need your computer on or pen and paper or whatever, life will inform you.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get that information, you didn't get that information. All will be revealed. If it turns out, this is how cool the whole thing is. If it turns out that you need pen and paper or your computer open and you didn't get the memo, then you'll watch conditioned mind come in and try to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
Try to make it mean something about you, how it's your fault, how you went blah, 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 blah. You get to see that. You get to put that into your recorder. You get to tell yourself what is really true about that. My life is in life's hands. I don't make decisions. I don't have to think about anything. I don't have to figure anything out. I don't have to worry about the future. I don't need to regret the past. Whatever I need to know, life is going to tell me. Life didn't tell me. There we are. I'm happy and complete, and I can always reach over and turn on the computer or find pen and paper or listen to the recording later. I don't need to worry. I don't need to be anxious. Life takes care of me perfectly.
And that same goes, and the exact same thing goes for, you know, whatever we're going to create, whatever system we're going to put in place to make these events smooth and perfect and wonderful and all of that, that's what life is going to give us as well.
That's what life is going to give us. Life gives us everything. Life already is giving us everything we need. We just need to wake up and pay attention to it. We need to pay attention to it as it gives us everything we need, not live with conditioning as it tries to take everything away from us.
You know, this is reminding me of a conversation I had with someone recently within the Sangha. It was such a helpful conversation where she was saying she had this insight. I think she was doing yoga, and she realized, I've said this to some people already, but she realized that something along the lines of she didn't have to figure out how to do this yoga pose. Like, life knew how to do the yoga pose. And so, and realizing she doesn't have to need to figure out how to do anything. Like,
that's
there
right.
was something she was coming up in her, that she had to do in her job that she had never done before. But she realized she didn't need to figure anything out. She needed to just be available to what life already knew. I mean, I had this image of, like, the information literally being out there in the universe and just inviting it to arrive.
Oh, yes. I mean, if you think about it, of course that's the way it works.
Yeah.
You know, your friend Thomas Edison and his light bulb. You know, all of a sudden, life delivered a light bulb. Okay? I mean, those guys were running around that factory or that laboratory or whatever it was until life delivered the information.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing all the time. We're going around doing whatever it is that we're doing, just waiting for life to deliver the information.
Yeah. So life knows how to plan events.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when we are living that way, it's utterly relaxed and joyful.
Yeah.
Because there is no danger of forgetting something or getting something wrong, or the whole thing is a big teaching moment, right? So whatever goes on, I get to learn. I get to see.
Yeah.
If I'm doing something unskillful, I'll see it.
Yeah.
And then I'll have the information that I need to be different. If I wonder, here's another piece of the mastery thing. Okay, this is for everybody on the call, all right? If there's something going on and you want to know about that, don't stay in a conditioned story and try to present that story so that people will process you through that story one more time that you won't hear and won't heed, and we'll all just have to endure the same story next week or next month or whenever it is. Ask. Okay, look and see where the difficulty is. Okay, I keep running up against this and this and this and this. What do I do? Get the guidance and then do it. Do it. If resistance arises, you know you have to do it. Yeah? Do people know what I mean by all of that?
That was actually, that's going to have to be one of our little things that we all carry around with us.
Yeah, because it just happened. Mike, what happened with Michael is a perfect example. Okay? So we had that conversation. I laid that out. Get it on your tape. Get it on your recording. Listen to it all the time. Now, that's guidance. That's not a, if you feel like it, it would be a good thing for you to do. Okay? And then you don't do anything else on that subject until you've done it. Do you see the difference? So all of you know that my teacher told me to wake up every 2 hours and walk around outside and do all of this before I went to sleep again. You all know that I had unbelievable resistance to that. I just knew I was going to die. And what did I do?
I did what he told me to do. Not only did I not die, it was the first giant step toward curing my depression. Okay? Now, was the depression cured because I got up every 2 hours? Or ultimately, was the depression cured because I was willing to do anything to get on the other side of what was going on with me about that? So the attitude of mind that says, yes, life, whatever. Yes, yes, I'll try that. Yes, I'll do that. Yes, yes. Not, well, I don't know, you know, it doesn't. No, that's going to result in the same lifetime of suffering that folks have had already. There is nothing in life that resists life. I mean, isn't it obvious when you think about it? The only thing that could be in resistance to life is something that wants to live outside of life. That's ego. We don't want to live with that.
So it's an hour, we're an hour in.
Okay.
I agreed that we would check in an hour in. I feel like we're exactly where we want to be.
Good.
So I
want to say one more thing, Jen, and then we'll move on to a new subject. If anybody is sitting in that room hearing any voices of resistance, do you know what to do? Who can tell me what you do, what anybody who's hearing voices of resistance is to take as their next step? Who can tell me?
This is Michael.
Uh-huh.
Write them down, speak them into a recorder, and say their lies. Note what's going on, what it feels like, what's happening in the body, what my experience is when it's happening. Give myself as much information as I can about it. That's what I'm seeing.
Yes, and offer yourself the mentoring that you need to turn your attention to instead of that. Yeah?
Yep.
So if somebody has a voice that says, oh, that's too hard, you can't do this, you've never been successful anyway, okay, you get that in the recording, and then you give the correct information. That's silly. That's just plain ridiculous. Of course you can do this. Of course you can do this. Whatever that is in your words.
That's the part I miss. Say what is so. Offer what the mentor would offer the person.
That's right. That's the most important part.
Maybe that's why I left there. I knew everyone just kind of, that was automatic.
Yes. So that's the most important part. So, I think you guys, wasn't I talking about this on the radio show last night? You know, there's the, this arises and then, or somewhere, anyway. So I describe what goes on, and then I take 10 or 15 minutes going through what I know to be true and what I need to hear under those circumstances, and what I want to say to the various parts of myself, and then I could launch into how grateful I am that I know this and what's possible for me in my life because I do. Okay?
Yeah, that was really fun on the show because it's exactly what conditioning does all the time, except it's doing it against conditioning. You know, because you say, oh, I think I really like to do something good for me today, and then conditioning launches into 15 minutes worth of reasons why that's a bad idea.
Exactly. And so we're just flipping same numbers, different folks having the experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So conditioning can get 2 or 3 minutes where you describe what it's doing and what it's doing to you and how that feels, and then go on. Just run on a little bit about the alternative to that and what you need and how that makes you happy and how that takes care of you and all of that. Get loquacious when it comes to that. that the right word? Yeah.
Huh? Say that again?
Is that the right word? It's reverberating in my head. I think it is, isn't it?
We were just commenting on what a great use of the word it was, so I think so.
Yeah, good. As long as we all agree and like it.
Exactly. That's really all that. It's our reality.
That's right. Okay, so are we going to move on to San Diego?
Here's what occurs to me out of this as we come to a close sort of on this section. Here's what I want to do, and I throw it out as a potential homework assignment for all of us for the next time we come back together, is to take my notes and to make, what I want is I want a cheat sheet of like 3-4 points, probably not more than that because it will, you know, start to get unwieldy, that's with me all the time at my desk, in my pocket, wherever. So something that's attractive that I like to look at, that has the salient points, that's what I'm looking to when I'm going about my day, and like that's where I'm looking. How am I deciding about this? How am I going about this? Here are the things that I'm looking at.
Yes. And don't forget to record it.
Yes, and record it.
Okay? Yep. So that every chance you get, every time you're alone, you know, if in the morning when you're getting ready, at night before you go to bed, if there are times during the day you're walking somewhere, you turn that recorder on and listen to that mentor telling you what is true.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's going to make the difference for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hearing it in your voice. I'm telling you, folks, this is the... Now, again, not that I'm deluded enough to think droves of people are going to spark to this, but it is the deal.
Okay.
It's why conditioning is so ungodly resistant. You know, if you're following along with this email class, you'd think I was asking people to cut their children up and put them in the freezer.
I know.
You know, it's crazy.
And yet, tons of people are really doing it and really seeing it. It feels like.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But the resistance to something so simple.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, there's, you know, so much resistance to just try it.
Yeah, I appreciated that. I think there were some class one responses at the bottom of this most recent class three response. And I appreciated that. Stop whining and just do it.
Well, it gets more so. I was just doing some today where, you know, the gloves are off here. It's like, people, I'm going to come to your house and slap you, okay? I'm sick of this. You know, I don't understand. I don't get Well, would you read the class?
That's what, in one of them you said, oh, please, read the class. Oh, no, for heaven's sake, read the class.
Don't ask me to take you seriously, please.
Okay, so am I hearing that we're committing to, we'll all make our little cheat sheet however we want it to look, and then share it, obviously, when we come back together, and that we're also going to record that for ourselves?
Yes.
Michael and Alex have something.
Yeah, part of what I want to take on is the resistance patrol part, to find the thing that is that I that can, you know, conditioning is just preventing me from having and going after it.
With the cartoons, you know, I mean, for people like us, it is going to be something like, I just can't add another meditation to my day. Or, you know, if we aren't living at the monastery, you know, I can't get up at first thing in the morning and meditate, or whatever that kind of thing would be. And with the cartoons, it's like, I can't live in kindness all the time. You know, that's ridiculous. How is that even going to be? No, that's just, no, don't ask me to do that. It's that level of resistance. Of course, that would be true for everybody, but do people know what I mean by that?
So you're saying, okay, because we have so much support for doing all the things that,
precisely,
you know, the average person would resist. So you're
precisely
saying what we have our eye on is potentially a more subtle level of, I don't want to be in kindness all the time, or I don't want to, that kind of thing.
Exactly. And which is better, you know, no, don't ask me to be cheerful while doing the dishes one more damn time. No. That kind of thing. And I would steer away from, like, for people in the world, getting up early to add another meditation, that kind of thing. Because that's exactly the kind of contest that conditioning sets up for people to fail over. Do you know what I'm saying? So I say, you know, I'm gonna meditate at 4 a.m. 7 days a week.
Right.
Okay. Well, no, I'm not. And then you're a lousy person, and see, you're a failure, and why don't you quit the whole thing?
Right.
But it's much harder to try to understand why I shouldn't be kind all the time.
It's much harder to understand why I should be kind all the time. Is that what you said?
Shouldn't. Why I shouldn't. You know, be kind to yourself. And when a campaign launches against that, you know, it's easier, I think, for people to see that that's a you know, that's kind of a, that's iffy. Well, you weren't kind to yourself about that. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So I was just looking at Alex, if he started doing the, you know, the patrol thing through the cartoons, that using something like kindness would be produce less resistance from, you know, people could get more quickly to, oh, yeah, that's a really good idea. You know, I'd like to do that.
Okay, so you weren't pointing at something for us. You were pointing at if Alex did go in that direction with the cartoon, what might work better in that context?
Yes. You guys can take on getting up every 2 hours if you want. I'm not going to suggest that to the world.
Right.
You know, or you can take on, you know, I'm going to do an hour of fitness every day, but I'm not going to, I wouldn't suggest that to the larger community.
Yes. Yeah. It's what's out there to the world is what's completely blatant and obvious, that this is so much egocentric karmic conditioning, you know, something as simple as kindness.
Yes.
That it won't let me have.
Yeah, right. Saying thank you.
Exactly.
Well, it's most people, unless they're really wrapped up in karmic conditioning, can see, oh, yeah, well, that, a lot of resistance to that. Well, that would be odd.
Right.
But, you know, exercise, I can't exercise for, what are these people, crazy? And, you know, it'd be very easy to believe the voices. They just don't know what my life is like. If anybody knew what my life is like, they would know that I can't do something like that. Now, this isn't resistance. This is just reality.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to put people in that position.
I think Michael had some.
I just wanted to make sure I was clear, because I blipped out for a second, that we're going to get a few things from this that we want to focus on. Write them down, get them on our recorder, and have those be our focus.
Yes. I think that's what Jen was suggesting.
Yeah, because one of the things I've really been wanting out of this process for myself is a cheat sheet to something, a form that resistance can take for me is, now wait, what? What
yeah.
are we doing? How? Just kind of this, well, stupid dust, I guess. This kind
yeah.
of confusion. And so if I, what... Everything we're doing, oh, right, I want it to meet these three criteria. You know, we are representing, blah, blah. Go ahead.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that you could consider doing as a group and then passing along to our cohort to live alone or with families or whatever is something that you would put in public.
Yeah, yes. Something
you know, Dogen's thing about treating every grain of rice the way you treat your own eyesight, or however that goes.
Right.
You know, I mean, he could have hung that in his hermitage, or, you know, he could have hung it in the kitchen, which apparently he did. So, you know, putting things out there like this can be as much a representation of how we do practice as anything else. And if it reminds us as we're going around of what we want to remember, then all the better.
Yeah. So as we each come up with our cheat sheet, we have one for ourselves, and there might be one that's posted publicly somewhere.
Yeah. You could get together as a group and decide which, you know, switch them out. you know, change them, rotate them every week so you keep looking at them and keep coming back to them. Whatever is a kind of a whole monastery reminder.
Yep, that's really nice. Yeah.
I mean, really, you know, isn't that the whole point of Zen, really? I mean, if we, you know, wanted to bring it down to something kind of simple, how could you actually be in touch with life?
Mm.
How could you be seeing, smelling, tasting,
yeah.
touching, feeling, and not just be overwhelmed with joyful gratitude? You know, it takes a really concentrated effort on what's wrong and what's missing to be able to, you know, to maintain anything other than joy.
Yeah. So true. Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking out my window right now. Here it is, you know, getting close to the dead of winter, even though it's not quite Thanksgiving. It's going to go down to freezing here in the next couple of days. And my little morning glories are just valiantly, I mean, there's not enough green in their leaves to create any kind of photosynthesis or however that works. And there they are, you know, just producing these beautiful little flowers.
Yep. Yep. It's like they know they're loved.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and every time I walk by, I tell them how beautiful they are and how much I love them, and I know they're happy about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's related to one of the last items I wanted to just throw out before we end, which I took a little walk today, and I just saw clearly the kinds of interactions we want to have. I wrote this list of, we're interacting about business as called for by the structure. So, like, if Rebecca's in charge of an event and, you know, publicity is needed, then she needs to contact Marie about the publicity details. We're interacting about any unclarities that might arise in the structure. I realize I'm not sure what such and such means. Great. I contact the person who can hopefully get me clarity, or they can, you know, point me to the person who can. We're interacting about new policies, like cookies aren't on the checklist. Kathy asked if we can have cookies, you know. I don't think it's a good idea. I wanted to check in with, you know, whoever the appropriate person to check in with. And then we're interacting, and this is actually a larger category, but every way that we're interacting is we're interacting on the level of training. And this is especially especially relevant at the monastery, where instead of now interacting on every minutia on the content level, we're interacting with each other on a level of learning how to approach the task you're doing so that you can take care of the minutia. Basically.
Yes, and related to that, and this is that next call, when Kathy asks about cookies, we want to answer that question for her in a way that makes Zen practice as crystal clear to her as we can make it.
Yes.
So that it's kind, compassionate, clear. It gives her a context. She comes away with it with a, oh, wow, okay, yeah, oh, I can see that.
Yep.
Rather than, no cookies. Or,
yeah.
Sure, cookies.
Yeah, whatever you think. And we had a call, we had two calls around San Diego, actually, because Maggie didn't make it to the first one, but where we dialed people into what we were doing, and Rebecca and I were just saying today how, boy, that was a nice addition to the process. And feels like there's a lot of, because, and what made me think of it was a nice opportunity to just connect and remember, oh, yeah, we're doing practice. We happen to be on an event, but we're doing practice.
Yes, which is different from processing.
Exactly, very different.
That might be another call, too.
Yep.
We're doing practice together. That's not the same as we're processing.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Good.
Because, and so that list that I just read, to me, is an encouragement to all of us, and boy, I'm really including myself in this, to get away from, I mean, what the events calls, I think everyone in the events team would agree, to some extent have just gotten into this sort of, you know, reminding each other about the things that aren't getting done, and it's not a good use of our time. And so this week, actually, I felt like it was hugely different. It was like a fraction of the time, and it just felt really different. So anyway, I think we're headed in the right direction. But if we can be clear about what things we communicate about, so, and I can look at that little list for myself and say, oh, no, wait a minute, now I'm just
kind of dragging people into answering things, you know, this is my work to do. I need to get clear on what I need and then go to the person that I need to get the information from. There, it's done. That's it.
Yes. Yeah. I like it. Does everybody like it?
Yeah, in fact, I like it. I was going to ask if you wouldn't mind typing that up and sharing that.
Sure. I would be happy to. And, you know, people could add or subtract from it. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, to, you know, I get so easily pulled into, like, okay, well, yeah, let's see. How will we solve that problem? Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa.
No. Whoa, that's not my problem.
Exactly. And it's
how
good.
How will you solve
really
that
good.
Problem? And do let me know when you've done it.
Yeah, and which is great training. I know that's good training for me when people leave something that's mine with me. It completely buoys my adequacy. Oh, right. This
well, and the other thing that I want to add to that, which, again, may be another call, is that our job in practice is to do the practice. Mm. It is constantly to get into relationship with ourselves. Mm. Our job is to get back to center, to get into the light room and operate out of there. Our job is not to go around in conditioning waiting for somebody to process us in our conditioning.
Mm.
Everybody with me on that one?
Yep. It's not what the Buddha taught.
It's what?
I said that last part, that not waiting around in my conditioning for someone to process me, it's just not what the Buddha taught.
No, it is not what the Buddha taught, and it's not what we practice.
Yep.
So just to keep that in mind along those lines of what you were just saying, you know, that I put that there because to me it logically follows what you said.
Yeah.
You know, I get into it, whatever is going on, I get into relationship with myself, I get to center, I have the guidance that life is giving me, I do what needs to be done in the ways that you said. If I need clarification, I'll get that. If I need somebody to give me information about something, I'll get that, and then I'll do what needs to be done.
Yep, that's great. Mm-hmm. Very clear.
Grown-up little Buddhas, that's what we are.
Yep, yep. So, and actually, you know, what just passed through, my favorite thing about it is we wouldn't be being asked to be grown-ups if we weren't already grown-ups. So that's,
precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely.
So here is what I'm seeing. We all have our homework assignment to make our little process thing that we're going to carry around, and we'll be sharing those.
And record. We're going to record.
And we're going to record them.